ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
श्रीमद् भागवतम 10th canto chapter 16 Krishna chastises the serpent Kaliya, text 49.
Tvam yasya janma stiti samyaman vibho. Guna aniho kritakala shakti drik. Tat tat swabhavan prati bodhayan sata. Samikshayamoga vahara ihase. Tvam yasya janma stiti samyaman vibho. Guna aniho kritakala shakti drik. Tat tat swabhavan prati bodhayan sata. Samikshayamogha vihara ihase. Tvam yasya janma stiti samyaman vibho. Guna aniho kritakala shakti drik. Tat tat swabhavan prati bodhayan sata. Samikshayamogha vihara ihase.
Tvam, you, he, indeed, asya, of this universe, janma stiti samyaman, the creation, maintenance, and destruction, vibho, O Almighty Lord, gunai, by the modes of nature, aniha, although uninvolved in any material endeavor, akrita, beginningless, kala shakti, of the potency of time, drik, the holder, tat-tat, of each of the modes. Swabhavan, the distinctive characteristics. Pratibodhayan, awakening. Sata, which are already present in their dormant state. Samikshaya, by your glance. Amoghavihara, whose playful activities are impeccable. Ihase, you act. O Almighty Lord, although you have no reason to become involved in material activity, still you act for your eternal potency of time to arrange for the creation, maintenance, and destruction of this universe. You do this by awakening the distinct functions of each of the modes of nature, which before the creation lie dormant. Simply by your glance, you perfectly execute all these activities of cosmic control in a sporting mood. Purport. Skeptics may question why the Supreme Lord has created the material world, which is full of birth, maintenance, and death. Here, the Nagapatnis point out that the Lord's pastimes are amogha, beyond any discrepancy. Sri Krishna actually desires that all conditioned souls live with him in his eternal kingdom, but those forgetful souls who are inimical to their loving relationship with God must go to the material world and be subjected to the conditions of time. The fortunate conditioned souls are startled into remembrance of their actual position as loving servants of the Lord. And from within the heart, the Lord then encourages them to come back home, back to Godhead, where time is conspicuous by its absence and where eternal, blissful existence supersedes the dramatic but disturbing functions of cosmic creation and annihilation. Om Gyanatimanandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. In this prayer by the Nagapatnis, the wives of Kaliyanag, you are hearing an issue that is often raised in Srimad Bhagavatam. And you should think about this issue. Often you'll find verses pointing out how, although it seems the Lord has acted to bring about the cosmic manifestation, actually he doesn't act. And he has no reason of his own in that he doesn't need anything from the material world. In Bhagavad Gita, you may remember how the Lord explains, Namam karmani limpanti, name karma palesriha. I don't have anything to achieve in the material world. I don't aspire for any fruits. Nor am I subject to the reactions of any activities. Now, this is baffling. How it is that the Lord acts, yet he desires no fruitive results? How it is that the Lord acts, but there are no reactions to his activities? We know about our modus operandi in the material world. We act to get a result. We want something for us. Because we feel incomplete in material existence, we act in order to solve that incompleteness, that hole in the heart. We have desires. Those desires reveal us to be insufficient and incomplete. And we hope that by the achievement of the desires, then we'll be satisfied and peaceful. In pursuing these desires, in acting on them, we're subject to reactions. Mostly, people don't know about these reactions until they're hit with them. Those who do know something about reactions, they think, well, anyway, you have to take what comes to you while you're trying to enjoy, while you're trying to do what you have to do to be happy. Now, how it is that Krishna can act without any fruitive result on his mind? And how can Krishna act without reaction? These are questions that you should be thinking about. Why? Because to be a devotee of Krishna means you want to understand Krishna. This is the exalted calling for your life, to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In mundane existence, people are very eager to have someone understand them. Maybe you've had that experience temporarily, of someone temporarily really wanting to understand you. That's why in a traditional family, children feel secure with their mother or father because they feel that mother or father understands me. And then when you grow older, you seek partners, romantic partners, and you seek friends because you're hoping that the friends and romantic partners will be motivated to understand you. That's what friends are for. No matter what you do, they nod their head and say, yes, yes, I understand. You're right. That's a real friend, right? I'll never forget once I was in Sweden some years ago, and I was at a preaching program, and there were lots of young people there, and they were telling me how glorious their friends were. And they explained, my friends are wonderful. They all agree with me. Otherwise, it wouldn't be my friends. So what they're saying is that I have persons who understand me. They see things my way. That makes you feel kind of secure and good in this world of suffering. That at least you have a few persons who take it as a main goal in life to understand you and support you. And then beyond friends, the general tendency is to seek out a romantic partner, the opposite sex. And in this way, your wounded psyche will become soothed. There's nothing so wonderful than to hear the words, I understand, dear. You're willing to slave for many lifetimes just to hear those words. And all your anxieties melt away. So, this need to understand others and to be understood by others is a prime propensity in human beings. If you have no one dedicated to understanding you, and if you have no one for whom you can understand, then life is very miserable. You get even suicidal. Maybe you can remember feeling like this sometimes. No one wants to understand me. Not one person can I count on who is trying to understand me. You feel like you're all alone in the city. You're in your flat. You're in your house all alone. And it just rattles your mind. No one is there to understand me. And no one is there for me to understand. Because you want to show that you have this capacity to understand others. But how can you show that capacity unless there is someone? So it's not only that you want to be understood, but you also want to manifest your capacities for understanding someone else. And then you feel good about yourself. Isn't it a good feeling, speaking in the ordinary sense, when you can feel that I've understood someone. I've understood that person. You feel like you feel a sense of expertise. That you're competent and capable. Because after all, human beings are social creatures. So you want at least one person whom you feel you can understand. Now, what about the Supreme Person? The goal of bhakti yoga is to understand Krishna. So we've already established that you cannot deny you have this propensity to understand others and be understood. But Srimad Bhagavatam is alerting you to the Supreme Person. Our goal in life, as devotees of the Supreme Lord, is to understand Krishna. And how does Krishna say he's understood? In Bhagavad Gita, Bhaktyamam Abhijanati. Only by devotional service can I be understood. We want to understand Krishna because then our attraction for him will increase. You know yourself, if someone has dedicated themselves to understanding you, then you are very inclined to reciprocate in a loving way with that person. Oh, you've gone through so much to understand me. Now I will bestow my loving graces upon you. As a reward for their austerities. And when you feel they haven't endeavored enough to understand you, then you just turn off the faucet. No more loving propensities come out. So in this way, human affairs go on. Now, why don't we try to understand Krishna? Where is our feeling of commitment to understand Bhagavad Dharma, the science of gods? The more we understand Krishna, the more we'll be attracted to Krishna. And Krishna will reciprocate with us. He's within the heart. He's seeing that you're endeavoring to try to understand him. If you don't care for someone, you won't try to understand that person. But just by your trying to understand someone, it means you care. You all know that. If someone tries to understand you, you accept that they care for you. Whether it's wife, husband, friend, temple president, spiritual master, if the person's trying to understand you, you really feel cared for. They can give you so much material comfort, but if you're not feeling understood, if you're feeling this person is not endeavoring enough to understand me, then internally you start to freak out. You become very disturbed. So, in Srimad Bhagavatam, you see all the dynamics of personal existence right before your eyes. Because ultimately everything is personal. Even when you hear about the activities of the cosmic creation, maintenance, and annihilation, it's all 100% personal. Just like the Nagapatnis are praying, "Oh, Almighty Lord, although you have no reason to become involved in material activity, still you act through your eternal potency of time to arrange for the creation, maintenance, and destruction of this universe. You do this by awakening the distinct functions of each of the modes of nature, which before the creation lie dormant. Simply by your glance, you perfectly execute all these activities of cosmic control in a sporting mood." This is all personal. We should ask ourselves how determined we are to use our time and energies to understand Krishna. Or do we simply want to believe in God and leave it at that? Often I ask devotees, how would you like it? If someone close to you says, "I believe in you," and just leaves it at that, they make no further endeavor to understand you. How would you like that? Would you consider that a successful relationship? If every day your dear one, dear friend, dear husband, dear wife, tells you, "I believe in you." In other words, "I accept that you exist." But they make no endeavor to understand you. How successful would your home life be, Dandakaranya, if that happened? You just told your wife, "I accept your existence. I believe that you exist." I just leave it at that. And never endeavor in any way to try and understand the person. You'd have hell at home. So why is it that we do this to Krishna? "I believe in Krishna. I accept the existence of God. Okay, now let's get on with our show." No. The way you display your care and desire to develop love is through trying to understand someone, making an effort. So what characterizes a devotee's life is that he or she is constantly making an effort to understand Krishna. That means using spare moments, spare time, not to please yourself, but to try to understand that supreme person. A devotee, as Srila Prabhupada explains, should feel overwhelmed by the pursuit of understanding Krishna. You should always feel, "I don't have enough time to understand Krishna. This lifetime is too short." Now, just because you don't have enough time doesn't mean, therefore, you should not spend any time. That is not very good. It's impossible to understand Krishna. He's so great, and I have so little time. So, since it's impossible to ever get to the end of understanding Krishna, I won't even make the effort. I'll just believe in him. No. We're talking about developing love. Love is shown by your care. When you seek to understand someone, that shows you care for the person. It shows that person is important to you. Therefore, we actually want our life to show endeavors we're making for understanding Krishna. In spite of all our busy obligations, and every ashram has its busy obligations. It's not just the grihasthas that are busy. The brahmacharis should be busy. The sannyasis are busy. Everyone's busy in their own way. And everyone can come up with their excuse why they don't have time to understand Krishna. But we push ahead if we're legitimate devotees because we want to show Krishna we care. I'm sure you've all had that. Most of you have had that opportunity in mundane life or even in Krishna consciousness to really think, I've got to show that person I care. And you do that by showing understanding. Often people say that acceptance is what everyone's looking for. If you just have that attitude of acceptance, now do whatever you like, I still accept you. That is very passive. It's not dynamic. Although people make a big deal about it these days in relationships. Acceptance. Just be accepting. Everyone nods their head. Accepting. Whatever people do, whatever strange things they do, just accept. Okay, I hope you find happiness in that way. However way they're destroying themselves, you just accept. This is very weak, tepid, passive. We want to move beyond passive acceptance in our striving to understand Krishna. We want to take up a position of dynamic efforts for understanding the Supreme Lord. So therefore, you look at a verse like this, spoken by the Nagapatnis, and instead of thinking, oh, there's so much of it that's philosophical, it's over my head, you really try to understand, what's the importance in this? How does this verse help me to understand Krishna more? And therefore, you become very grateful to Srimad Bhagavatam. You become grateful to every verse, because every verse is giving you impetus for understanding Krishna. Every verse is giving you information about the Supreme Lord. Sometimes people blame God. Why did you create the material world for our suffering? If you hadn't created the material world, we wouldn't suffer. But this is like blaming the government. Why did you build a prison? And therefore I went there. You went to prison because you broke the law. The government has the foresight to understand that not everyone is going to choose to be a law-abiding citizen. And so the government in advance has a prison. Now, just because the government has that foresight to build a prison doesn't mean the government is forcing people to be criminals. Now, you have forced your way into prison by your criminal activities. Similarly, you have forced your way into the material world by your rebellion against Krishna. You actually have forced your way into the material world. Even though ultimately everything comes from Krishna, Krishna does not personally create the material world in terms of someone working and creating something. The Lord has his potencies. This is very important to understand about the science of God. Parasha Shaktir Vividayava Shuyat. The Lord has multifarious potencies for getting things done. Sabhava Kigyana Bala Kriya Cha, the Upanishads say. His knowledge shows itself in action. And in this way, things happen. Krishna doesn't labor personally. He has energies to do everything. Just like this verse says, you act through your eternal potency of time to arrange for the creation, maintenance, and destruction of this universe. Kala Shakti, that is a potency. It causes things to happen. It stirs things. First of all, O Almighty Lord, although you have no reason to become involved in material activity, the material world doesn't come out of any particular reason for the Supreme Lord in terms of his own personal desire. It's just created by the potencies of the Lord as a place for those who refuse to behave properly. But Krishna is not personally tied up with all that. To us, the activities of creation, maintenance, and annihilation seem so extraordinary, so powerful. Any civilized person, even uncivilized persons, are astonished by the functions of nature. Whether you're so-called savage living in the jungle, or you're a savage living in the city. Everyone becomes fascinated. The stars in the sky, how nature's functioning. But as extraordinary as the functions of nature are, they're very, very insignificant compared to Krishna's personal activities. Actually, the whole universe is very insignificant and inconsequential. What did Lord Chaitanya explain to Vasudev Dutt when Vasudev Dutt said, let me take upon myself the karma, the sinful reactions of all the living entities in the universe. Let them go back to Godhead and I'll suffer each one of their karmic reactions. This is inconceivable for us. We're having a tough time just accepting that we have to suffer for our own sinful reactions. That's too much. And we're very happy, you know, when Krishna reduces our karmic reactions. An intelligent person is afraid. What about the reactions to all the things I've done? So we're very happy that Krishna says, don't worry, Mahasutra, I'll take care of your sinful reactions. But here, Vasudev Dutt is praying, let me take the sinful reactions for every living entity in the universe. Let them go back to Godhead. This is real compassion. As Prabhupada points out in the purport, he's not making that prayer just for those who believe in him. Believe in me and you'll be saved. No, he's saying that for everyone regardless. I'll suffer for them. I'll suffer their sinful reactions. Whether they believe in me or not, just give me the sinful reactions of every living entity in this universe. Let them go back to God and I'll stay. This kind of compassion is just beyond our imagination. Lord Chaitanya told him, first of all, what is the big deal for Krishna if all the living entities in this universe go back to Godhead? What is the big deal to Krishna if even one universe becomes lost? Lord Chaitanya explained, this universe is like one mustard seed in a bucket of mustard seeds. So many devotees here cook, so you know. You know what a mustard seed looks like. If you have a big bucket of mustard seeds and one falls out, do you become full of anxiety? Oh no! You go running to the temple president, a mustard seed fell out of the bucket. Oh my God! What a disaster in the kitchen. No one does that. There's just one mustard seed out of a bucket of mustard seeds. But that's how Lord Chaitanya refers to this universe. He says, just as no one cares that one mustard seed drops out of a bucket and becomes lost. Similarly to Krishna, even if one whole universe disappears, no big thing. Think about that. We take our world to be so important. Our home, our neighborhood, our city, our nation, our earth. But even if you take the whole universe so seriously, for Krishna it's insignificant. So what if a universe becomes lost? You can imagine telling someone, I lost a mustard seed yesterday. So Lord Chaitanya says, this is Krishna's attitude. A universe disappeared yesterday. There are countless universes. But not only are the universes insignificant to Krishna, but also the creation, maintenance, and annihilation of every universe is such an insignificant thing. Therefore, the Lord is always telling his devotees, why are you so worried about how you'll live? You just take shelter of me. Creation, maintenance, annihilation are such insignificant activities. You take shelter of me. I will arrange for you. Yoga Vishema Vahamyaham. Yoga Shema Vahamyaham. I'll preserve what you have. I'll carry what you lack. Ananyas Chintayanto Mam. Yejana Parupasate. For those who are always thinking of me, Krishna says, I'll preserve whatever good they already have, and I'll personally bring to them the good that they're missing. So this is Krishna's personal dealings with his devotees. And those dealings are far beyond creation, maintenance, and annihilation. Those dealings are far more significant than creation, maintenance, and annihilation. Another point to meditate on in this verse is the glance of the Lord. By the glance of the Lord, he impregnates the living entities into the cosmic manifestation. These living entities are asleep after the annihilation. They're asleep, and all their material propensities are asleep with them. When they are awakened by the Lord, then they begin their life once again in the prison house of material existence, and they act according to their propensities that they have stored with them from the previous creation. Now just see how helpless you are. You can't wake yourself up from the slumber between creation and between annihilation and the next creation. You need Krishna to wake you up. Yet we think we're so powerful. As soon as we wake up and life begins again in the new universe, immediately we think, oh, I am so powerful. I have so many abilities. But you couldn't wake yourself up from your slumber. Merged in the body of Mahavishnu, you couldn't wake yourself up. So you're dependent on Krishna just by your very presence in this world. Still, we think we're so independent. Now, let's talk about the Nagapatnis. You know this Leela with Kaliya. The Lord was dancing on Kaliya's heads. Kaliya has thousands of heads, but 100 of those heads are chief. Therefore, in some verses you'll read that Kaliya had thousands of heads, and in other verses you'll read that Kaliya had 100 heads. The Acharyas explain that he had 100 chief heads. So, Krishna would dance on each one, pushing each head down. And then Kaliya would show his rebelliousness by raising another head, and Krishna would step on that with his foot and push it down. Meanwhile, Kaliya is vomiting out so much poison from each of the heads. Finally, he stops vomiting poison and he starts vomiting blood. That is a sign that he's getting purified. His pollution is diminished because no more from his mouth is coming poison. Instead is coming blood. Meanwhile, the demigods are playing musical instruments. They sing. Krishna wants to dance. So all the demigods and sub-demigods, Upadevas like the Gandharvas and Charanas, they all start playing musical instruments to accompany Krishna. First, Krishna is dancing on Kaliya's heads without any music. And he's even, the Acharyas point out, he's calling out his own rhythms. Just like if someone plays a mridanga, they can say the rhythms, the mantras. Gitata, gitata. Anyone has learned to play mridanga like that? Yes. So similarly, Krishna was dancing on the head of Kaliya, on the heads of Kaliya, and he was calling out the rhythms. Then the demigods and the sub-demigods came and played musical instruments. Oh, our Lord wants to dance. Let us serve him by accompanying his dancing with the most beautiful music. What was Krishna's real motive in dancing on Kaliya? Was it to subdue Kaliya? Was it to show his defeat of the Kaliya serpent? No. The inner purpose of Krishna's dancing on Kaliya was to please the girls. Yes. He's showing off for the young girls of Vrindavan. Watch me. Watch me dance. Of course, Krishna is not being vain. He is the most attractive dancer. Nataraj, he's the king of the dancers. And why shouldn't the young girls of Vrindavan be attracted to him? There's nothing more attractive to Krishna. So it's all a natural activity. No put on. No egoism. Just life as it should be lived. Krishna's parts and parcels are attracted to him. And the Lord is increasing their attraction by his dancing. So, as he's dancing on each head, and Kaliya rebels and raises another head, Krishna steps on that with his foot. Kaliya is getting more weary and more weary. Finally, some realization starts to arise in him that maybe I'm dealing with the supreme cause of all causes. I've never met anyone who could do this to me. Now, why did Kaliya start to think, maybe I'm dealing with the Supreme Lord? Because previously, his wives, the Nagaputnis, who were very exalted devotees, were always on his case. You should surrender to Krishna. You should be a devotee. Don't be so envious. They were always preaching to him, but Kaliya wouldn't listen. So here, in the Shastra, you have an example of the wives preaching to the husband. You've got to become a Krishna Bhakta. But Kaliya wouldn't listen. So now he's being chastised by the Lord. The Lord is dancing on his head. And Kaliya has vomited out all his poison. He's vomited out blood. He's so weary, he's on the verge of death. He's almost at the end. And in that condition, he begins to realize. He remembers the preaching of his wives. And he comes gradually to his senses. Now his wives, the Nagaputnis, are watching. They see his facial expressions. They notice a change. Wives, just by watching their husband's face, they know his mood. So they're watching. Wait a minute. This atheist rascal nonsense is becoming a Vaishnav. See, previously they were condemning their husband. When Krishna was dancing on his heads and subduing Kaliya, the Nagaputnis were all applauding. That atheist, that nonsense, he deserves to die. Kill him, Krishna. We'll all become widows and engage in your service. Let him die. We'll go on with our devotional service. We've told him so many times Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God. He didn't listen. Kill him, Krishna. We don't mind being widows. But then, when they saw a change gradually appear in Kaliya, their husband, then immediately their female wife compassion came out. Oh, wait, Krishna, wait. Our husband is a Vaishnav. Oh, glories. And then they began to offer prayers to pacify the Lord. Now they were emotionally identifying with their husband and were pleading for mercy. Because they saw, hey, he's actually Krishna conscious, not such a bad guy. Let him live. So the first prayer that the Nagapatnis offer is one supporting Krishna. They also want to appease his anger. So they tell him, whatever you have done is just. In other words, we don't accuse you of anything in your treatment of our husband. Everything you've done is just, and he is getting his proper reactions. Then, in so many prayers, they begin to ask for mercy. They wonder, how did our husband get such a chance that the Supreme Lord is dancing on his head? This mercy even the Goddess of Fortune can't get. What has he done? And then their conclusion is, it's simply Krishna's special mercy. He actually hasn't done anything sufficient to deserve this, the Lord dancing on his head. After that, they offer prayers glorifying the Lord, revealing the opulences of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They're offering obeisances again and again. And in those prayers of obeisance, you get to learn so much about the Supreme Lord. Now we're getting near the end of those prayers. So either tomorrow or the next day, we'll discuss the wrap-up. How they make their final, how the wives of Kaliya make their final appeal to the Lord after offering suitable prayers. Being ladies, they're very cognizant of the Lord's emotions. So they know he's angry. So they want to calm him down. So first, they establish that you're doing the right thing. And then they start talking about mercy. You've given such mercy to Kaliya Nag, touching his head with your feet. And then they're going to finish by saying, since you're so merciful, let our husband live. So this is an example of how wives can benefit their husband in Krishna consciousness. All right. Any questions?
Thank you for the wonderful talk. I heard somewhere that the healing of different demons was a kind of multi-dimensional thing. Krishna can be healing demons, and it's an attractive pastime, but also some of the chariots said some demon being that they represented an artist.
Yes, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says like that, yes.
I'm just curious about this particular demon. We discussed so many cases, I was thinking the use of the smashes and all.
There are so many details like that in the commentaries by Acharyas. Just like Putana, she represents cheater in the guise of a devotee. She snuck into Vrindavan, looking like a beautiful, motherly woman. But actually, her business is something else. Her business is to kill Krishna. That one I remember. But there's so many details, you can go on and on. That's why you should feel you don't have enough time in your life to understand Krishna. But yet we always try to understand Krishna. We don't have a defeatist attitude. No time for reading, so what's the use? Anyway, I do accept Krishna. If you want to love someone, show that you're trying to understand that person. It's like sometimes devotees, no matter in what situation, in a managemental situation, in a family situation, in the ashram, they say, let's spend some quality time together. That's a popular buzzword these days. Let's spend some quality time together. So you have to spend some quality time trying to understand Krishna. That shows you care. Anything else? Yes?
You were talking about the desire to understand, and that is good. It seems that generally understanding is based on the false ego, that we're wanting to be understood. You know, you might think, this is the thing for my life is so important to my understanding, being understood, this is the false ego, not the self. And personality is quite often more related to the false ego, and you might say, oh, this person is a controller, maybe he's a control freak. So,
wait, you lost me. How did you go from...
You're trying to understand somebody's personality. In that a personality seems to be related a lot to the modes and to your nature, and this person may want to be a controller, and people identify that controlling aspect as their personality. So how do you differentiate somebody's personality?
How do you differentiate?
Like, it seems that, you know, somebody may be very quiet, and you might say that that is part of their personality, whatever, but this is also related to the moment, so it seems to be most material nature.
Your material personality is composed of Trigunamayi.
So how do you find your own personality?
You find yourself through devotional service. The more you engage in devotional service, beginning with chanting the holy name, the more you'll find out who you really are. Otherwise, you're a mystery to yourself. It's good to be humble and admit, I really don't understand myself. Let me find myself through devotional service, through bhakti yoga. That's real humility. Just like Sanatana Goswami, when he approached Lord Chaitanya, what did he say? People call me a great pundit, a great scholar, and I'm such a fool, I believe them. But how can that be so when I don't know who I am, why I'm in this world, why I'm suffering? That's humility. Not that I know my personality, I know how I am, so the devotees have to all recognize that. Are the devotees ready to deal with me as I am? Standing before them? Humility means I really don't know yet so much about myself, but I'm willing to try. And as you serve Krishna, you find there are various anarthas, unwanted things, as you were saying, that all comes to you in the process of chanting and serving Krishna. You realize that your motives aren't as sterling as you think they are. But amazingly, Krishna still accepts your service. Then you become very grateful. It takes a long time for us to understand how full of ourselves we really are. And then we become very grateful to Krishna and the devotees for tolerating us. Anything else? Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.